Good evening, ladies and ladies. Firstly, yeshar koach for coming out in the snow. It's a tremendous indication of your dedication, and I really appreciate your getting your boots wet and putting on your boots and your coats and everything else. Yeshar koach achem, thank you. And despite the fact that the shuttle was not operative, we also appreciate you hiking up the hill. Just to go over, this will probably, unless things happen over the next few days, this will probably be the third and final shiur of Hilchos Makkah B'Patish. We'll see, but things always end up cropping up after we think we finish. But I assume this is a good chance this will be the third and final shiur of Makkah B'Patish. And let's just review what we did last week. So last week we mentioned the question regarding separating Swiss Miss chocolate puddings, and I'll have you know today, as my kids had a snow day, so I went home for lunch and I saw my son Menachem take out a pair of two connected Swiss Miss chocolate puddings. He ripped off the top of one of them and ate it while it was still connected to the second one, and he then pulled off the top of the second one and ate it while it was still connected to the first one. Proof in the pudding, no pun intended, but proof in the pudding that you can, that the kli is completely finished even though you didn't snap it off. That's what Shlomo Zalman's kula, why you're allowed to snap off, but isn't snapping off, putting the finishing touch on the Swiss Miss chocolate puddings or the leaven or whatever else you're eating. Shlomo Zalman says, no, the kli is already made. You're just, I don't know, it's convenient for you to disattach them because it's more convenient for you, that's your problem. That's not Makkah B'Patish. Rabbi Yashiv did not agree to him. Rabbi Yashiv felt that that was the finishing touch on putting, on separating the, on making these completely ready for normal consumption. Most people don't eat their chocolate puddings like my son Menachem did at lunch today. And therefore, Rabbi Yashiv doesn't hold like Menachem. Last week we also mentioned a Gemara that talked about pulling out the pine needles. Let's say you have your weave of fabric and some pine needles or some thorns blew inside the weave. So the Gemara says that to pull out those pine needles would be considered Makkah B'Patish, because you're putting the finishing touch, meaning pull out the pine needles once it's made into a jacket or a shirt, that would be finished putting the finishing touch. And we extended that to when we take, again, I don't know how it works with women, but when guys go to the tailor to have their cuffs done, the tailor puts that chalk on it, so to take off that chalk would be the final finishing touch to make it look presentable. That would also be a violation of Makkah B'Patish. What I did not research as I ought to have, but I'm starting to be noted that this could be a problem, is if you have a lot of lint on a garment. I'm just wondering if taking off all the lint would be considered Makkah B'Patish. I didn't see this anywhere, but I'm just wondering aloud if taking off the lint would be a problem from a garment. Certainly if we never buy things with lint on them. I mean, we buy jeans that are ripped already. We buy hats. I mean, not we, but our friends. Buy hats that are, you know, already bent and crumpled and ripped, because it's cool. But I don't think we buy sweatshirts that have lint on them. Usually that happens after you wash them, especially if you wash them with a tissue in the washing machine and they come out all linty. So if you would buy something with lint and you had to remove the lint so that you could wear it for the first time, you're making it into the wearable sweatshirt, t-shirt, whatever it is, that would definitely be Makkah B'Patish. Because you're making it from when it was made till you're able to use it, that would definitely be Makkah B'Patish. What I'm questioning is, if you already have been using it, it got dirt, it's as though it got dirty, and you're making it now reusable, I'm not sure if removing the lint then would be a problem or not. Question mark, we have to research. Last week we talked about, Baruch Hashem, we had a kula, because in Makkah B'Patish, since we're not so familiar with it, we end up with a lot of chumras. So, big kula, that you are allowed to rip off, to tear those price tags and Bloomingdale tags or Lowman's, whatever it is, from your clothing on Shabbos, because your clothing have been completely finished before those The seller is very happy for you to take that item home with a tag on. So it's not like the last stage in the preparing of this item is to pull off the tags. No. He wants you to have those tags, as opposed to the case we spoke about 2 weeks ago, that the Gemara told us a story of, not a story, but a case where you have a shirt and you had to sort of pull it over your head to bust through the neck hole, to make a neck hole. There, the shirt isn't ready. It's not usable. As you pull it over your head and bust through the neck to make a neck hole, that's making something non-usable into usable. But in a case where you have a price tag, it's completely usable. It's how the Mr. Bloomingdale's and Mrs. Lohman, how they wanted the shirt or the sweater or the outfit to be, and therefore it was completely finished. Okay, there's something attached to it that you want to get out of the way. Mutar lechatchila, to rip off those plastic, you know those little plastic, funny plastic. Fine, that's mutar to remove. Also, last week we talked about folding on pleats. And I think we finished off with the idea of straightening metal. We talked about straightening metal last week, just at the very end. We saw that the halacha is that just like in the Mishkan, the Tosos writes that what was the makkah b'padash in the Mishkan? That as they shaped the kelim, I assume the metal kelim, the gold kelim, the silver kelim, they would sort of look, as the artisan would be finished with his kli, he'd look at it and see it's a little bit uneven there, a little bit dented there, or dented in, dented out, and he'd give a little tap for that finishing touch. That was the end of making the kli in the Mishkan, and therefore, anybody who would bend metal, say the poskim, would therefore violate makkeh b'patish. So, accordingly, if I have my temple bar bent, or I have my nose pieces bent, and I have my glasses and I want to bend them back into shape, sometimes it happens like you fall asleep on the couch with your glasses on, you wake up and you smush them with the weight of your face, so then you cannot re-bend those back into position to be straight on Shabbos. That would be makkeh b'patish. While we're talking about glasses, let's just add something that we didn't speak about last week. What do you do if your lens falls out of your glasses? So there, if you reinsert them, if you have glasses that they pop out every 3 days, and conveniently every 3 days ends up being every Shabbos, somehow it just happens like that. So if it happens, whether it's on Shabbos or not, if they come out often, and you just always pop them back in, and you're used to it, no problem. That's just how your glasses work. They pop out lens glasses. And you could pop them back in. If, however, you have normal glasses and they don't pop out, so if it, God forbid, would pop out on Shabbos, your frame would break or just the lens got banged and popped out, it would be a violation of makkeh b'patish to put the glasses back in. Because what are you doing? You're restoring broken glasses. So therefore, did you ever see a guy... always the nerd on the sitcoms is always a nerd in the high school class of the prom. There's always that nerd there who always ends up being the star. So he comes in with a piece of rubber band over his glasses. So that would be a permitted way to fix your glasses on Shabbos. Why? Because no one's going to leave the rubber bands there permanently. However, if you would put some kind of metal, even with a twist tie, in a way that's not so visible and somebody might tend to leave it there for a long period of time, that would be a problem of makkeh b'patish. Similar to what? Similar to what we talked about 2 weeks ago with the shoelaces. If you put in a shoelace for the first time, so if it's a shoelace that you might leave there, or that sash in the outfit, that matching sash, that brings the outfit to perfection with the mint green sweater we talked about, or the mint green sash, that is something that you're going to leave there permanently, it will be a problem. However, let's say you use a safety pin. Let's say the screw comes out, where the temple bar bends, opens and closes, the screw comes out. Can I put a safety pin? I can't screw something in. That's certainly a problem. I can't screw the screw back in. But can I just put a safety pin there to hold the temple bar to the rest of the frame? So since no one's going to be walking around with a safety pin in their glasses in a permanent kind of way, we're not worried that you're going to leave it there, and that will be mutter lechatchila to... That's a mutter way to fix your glasses on Shabbos, if the screw comes out. So again, if the lens pops out, you could put it in with a rubber band, because you wouldn't leave it there. And if the temple bar gets disattached from the frame, you could put a safety pin, to connect the two. That will be okay. But could you twist a paper clip? No, twisting a paper clip to get to a different form that you wanted, that will be a problem of makkeh b'patish. So when you put in the safety pin, as long as it stays straight, that will be okay. That is not bent, you're not bending metal, and you're not being metakin your glasses because it's not something that you would leave that way. Yeah. We talked 2 weeks about, in the first Yom HaKippur, if a person has a very specific belt that goes with a very specific top, and the first time that you put that sash through those belt loops to make it into the outfit, that the poskim say will be Makabe Patish. But that's the first year, so we'll catch up on that.
That's just the first time? Like if it gets...
If you put it in there with the intention of leaving it there.
If it comes out of the loops...
And you put it back with the intention to leave it there, I have to double check there. I forgot. It might be okay if it's not the first time. I have to double check
that.
Then it's fine, right? We're talking about something that you leave there for good. Yeah.
The safety pin wouldn't be a problem with Topher?
That is correct. The safety pin, I think Topher might only apply to flexible fabric kind of material. I don't know if Topher would be apply to hard things. The question that you could ask is binyan, bona. Are you building? But the halacha is that in general, there are exceptions that we might talk about in a few weeks. When we talk, maybe we'll do bona next. In general, we don't apply bona to items. Bona is for buildings, for shacks, for structures, not for items, utensils, Caleb.
And we were speaking about the shots of the men's pants. Is that only the first time you've ever worn it before? I mean, or is it subsequent times when a man gets chalk on someone's pants?
Okay, you're asking what happens if you just get chalk on your pants, not during the tailoring, but just you get dirt on your, and anybody gets dirt on their clothing. So cleaning clothes is a totally different malacha of melabein that is one of the other 39 malachas that when they made the Mishkan they had to bleach, I guess. They had to bleach certain, the wool that comes off the back of the sheep. It's sort of dirty gray. They wanted it to be white, let's say, for the big day Kohen Gadol, maybe for the curtains around the Mishkan. So there, that's the av malacha for all cleaning. So here I'm not even talking about the cleaning aspect, I'm talking about the finishing touch aspect of making the pants ready to wear. Or the first time they're back from the alterations. Right. If you had them altered, so while they're being altered, they're probably like knocked out of commission, right, because they took out the hem, and now that they're putting the hem back in, it's now in a new state, and even though you wore them, let's say a person, I don't know, grew 6 inches. So, happens to us all the time, you grow quickly. And I all of a sudden want to redo my hem. So once the tailor takes out that original hem or that cuff, I assume we're back to square zero. When he puts it together again, it's going to be like new. I think the reason, you're asking why is bending problematic even if it was bent already and you're just bending it anew? I think bending metal, we're a little more serious about because that is mamish what was done in the Mishkan. That is the av malacha of Makabe Patish, right? We didn't talk about the Mishnah. In the Mishkan, you didn't have, people pulling out pine needles from shirts. In the Mishnah, you didn't have people breaking their heads through shirt collars. We mamish talked about bending metal. So I think we're going to be a little bit more careful about bending metal. Last week, we ended off with a very good question, and thank God Joanna Blumenthal sent me the follow-up email, as I asked her to. And so maybe she'll listen to the tape and she'll get the... Oh, did her... Wow, her recording's right here. So call out to Joanna Blumenthal. Thank you. A round of applause, please, for Joanna. Okay, so we asked the following question. Bending metal for a productive purpose is a problem, right? So what about when you have your aluminum foil pans, you buy them for Amazing Savings, and if you looked carefully in their Amazing Savings, right up near the aluminum foil pans, there's also... the pan covers, right? The pans are 20 cents and the pan covers are like 4 cents. Okay? Go to Amazing Savings, you'll finish. And you put the pan cover on, now you want to bend the metal, bend the rim down around the cover, so maybe that's bending metal, certainly for a productive purpose, so maybe that kind of bending metal should also be considered a problem of Makabe Patish. That's the question that we left last week. So I did a little research this week, I spoke to Rav Schechter about it today or yesterday, and he pointed out that, let me ask you a question. I buy a shirt. And the first time I take the shirt out, I put it on, and I button the buttons. Is anyone going to say that buttoning the buttons of a shirt that you put on for the first time is makkah b'patish? Are you putting the finishing touch on a beged by buttoning it? Or you wear a you bought a jacket for Yontif or for Shabbos, and you zip up the jacket. Is zipping it up the very first time when you come back from Macy's, is that going to be makkah b'patish? No, that's not makkah b'patish. That's not anything to do with the manufacturer or the creation of the item. That's the hishtamshus, the derech hishtamshus, just the way you use the item. Using something is not makkah b'patish. Improving something is makkah b'patish. Restoring something is makkah b'patish. Fixing something is makkah b'patish. Manufacturing something is makkah b'patish. But just using it in its normal hishtamshus, in its normal way of use, that is not a violation of makkah b'patish. And therefore, if Shechter said, and I think it's with somebody else also about it, just to bend over to bend that rim on top of the foil cover, even though you're bending metal, but that's the bending metal of just normal usage. Accordingly, I mean, I think with a safety pin, you're not really bending anything. But a safety pin would be the same thing. Just opening and closing the safety pin, as long as you're not reshaping it, just opening and closing the safety pin, even if that would somehow be considered, construed as bending, I think that would be okay, because that's the derech hishtamshus. So that's just an important thing to keep in mind. That's why your shirt is okay. Similarly, I saw Rabbi Ribiad in his book talked about if you use the mercury thermometers. Any nurses here? Do they use mercury thermometers anymore? No. Okay, so sometimes there are people who, for whatever reason, need to use thermometers regularly on Shabbos for different hormonal treatments, and they need for those hormonal treatments, they have to see their exact temperature, and they have to take their temperature on Shabbos, and they know this, they have to do this for over a duration of time, and therefore they want to get a non-digital thermometer for Shabbos use. So could they shake down? You might not even know what shaking down a mercury thermometer is, but if you have, in the olden days, remember, you know, you go to those museums and there's your mother told you about it. So when you shake down the mercury thermometer and get the mercury on the bottom, you're like setting it up to start from zero, right? You're setting it up to start and use now, for anew. So is that going to be a problem? The answer is that it's also going to be permitted for the same reason. That's how you use a thermometer. That's the derech hishtamshus, the way you use something. You button a shirt, you zip a jacket, you shake down a thermometer, you fold the rim on top of the foil pan. That's all just how you use things. That's not making, manufacturing, improving, fixing. And therefore, all those things are going to be permitted lechatchila and going to be mutter. Yeah. Twist ties, we're not going to discuss. I didn't have to look into twist ties. I told you all I know about twist ties. The two stories with Rav Yashiv. That's all I know about twist ties. I'm scared to get into that, so I just told you. I told you what I know. Because... I don't know. I didn't research about twist ties, so I'm scared to speak about twist ties. But my initial thought could be that twist ties, when you get a twist tie, it's not... Yes, it's the normal... I hear. I'm not sure. It could be fine, but again, I told you this two stories as well. Yashiv last week, remember that? And I don't know more. So just to mention two or three more applications. Let's continue with while we're talking about these metal pans, and we'll talk about two or three more applications. Yeah. Okay, so when you throw this, I was working on for quite a while. Why did I think about this? Because I was thinking about Joanna's question this past Shabbos about the top, and as I was taking my metal pans and putting them in the garbage, I noticed that instinctively I crushed each metal pan as I threw it out. I said, wait a second, if I'm being so makpid in my Monday night shiur about bending metal, so maybe this is also, you're bending the metal, and it's certainly for permanent, you know, it's certainly a permanent time frame because it's going straight down the chute. And maybe that would be a problem. So would that be makkah b'patish? What do people think? You're bending metal. It's going to stay in that shape. Should that be a violation of makkah b'patish? Perfect. The whole purpose of makkah b'patish is that you're trying to create something or improve something. You're trying to do something better. When you get rid of your... when you're throwing out your old chickeny or kugly timpan, you're not improving by throwing, by bending it, you're not improving it anyway, you're not fixing it anyway, and therefore it will not be makev patish. That's what Reshefta told me. But while we were talking, he continued and said, oh, but maybe there's a different issue. So in order to introduce a different issue, let's go on a tangent for about a minute and a half and see where we could go with, because I noticed that I bend about seven tins every Shabbos. I'm not talking about aluminum foil, I'm talking about tin pans. In the olden days, they did not have carpets, they did not have laminate floors, they didn't even have wood floors, they had dirt floors. So in the olden days, there were halachas in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch about sweeping the floor. And not just in the olden days, but even as recently as the Mishnah Brura in the 19-teens, maybe in 20s. So by then they had floors that were stone or tile or wood. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bidvarav. So the concerns that Chazal had, that the Gemara actually talks about when you sweep floors, certainly dirt floors, is that whenever you smooth out dirt, or if there's a bump and you fill in the bump, a hole, a charitz, and you fill in that hole with dirt as you're just evening out all the dirt on the floor, that could be similar to choresh, to plowing. Whenever there's a bump and you make it flat, or there's an indentation and you fill it in, that's choresh. And the question is, when you're doing it unintentionally, it may happen, it might not happen, that's discussed in a siman in Shulchan Aruch about choresh, regarding sweeping the floors. The Mishnah Brura, in his side bar, in the Beir Halacha, on the side of the Mishnah Brura, he says that if you're in a city where no one has dirt floors, you don't really have to worry about this. So, I think in our city, you could sweep the floors on Shabbos. But, what do you use to sweep the floors? Here, the Rama says, talks about a certain kind of broom, and I assume bristles were made out of wooden, almost toothpicks, or something, long toothpicks or long splinters of wood, and that was the, not like a horse hair brush or something, but like hard bristles. There, the Rama says you cannot use a hard bristled broom, even if you're sweeping on a flat surface where there's no dirt. There's a different issue, because when you sweep, you're going to be breaking those bristles, and that's going to be destroying a kli. Ad kam the tangent. So now we're going to take that concept that the Mishnah Brura taught us about you can't use hard bristled brooms because you're destroying the kli. Oh, so you can't destroy a kli? I never knew that. Wait a second. When I took that chicken-y aluminum foil pan and I bent it into a... I like bending them in squares. Is that just because I'm a little OCD, or do other people do that also? Other people do that also. Okay, so I like bending them in squares in very neat ways because I think I'm saving the world, because the smaller area, the smaller volume it takes up, the less space in the landfill it's going to be, and I'm very environmentally friendly. I throw all my bottles into recycling. I'm very mindful about these things. So, am I destroying a kli? Am I disassembling. I'm being soter, meaning taking apart, destroying a kli. Just like you do that if you have a hard bristled brush, they might break, you can't do that. So too, I can't fold. Rav Shechta thought that that could be an issue. Rav Shechta thought that that might be an issue. Again, I think we have to discuss this more at length see what other poskim say, because I don't think, I've never really heard people talk about this. Like when you call people Shabbos goyis, it's not because you watched how they throw away their tin pans in the aluminum foil. It's usually for other things. So I'm just wondering, why is this a broadly held position? So Shechta thought it would be a problem. I bumped into Rav Bleich, or J.D. Bleich, who wrote the tremendous Talmud Chacham, gigantic Talmud Chacham. He wrote the many volume series on contemporary halachic problems. So he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham here in Yeshiva also. And he felt the same way, actually, independently. I didn't like prod him. I didn't set him up for the, I just sort of asked him, what do you think about, this? And he said also it could be a problem of destroying a kli. If you destroy the aluminum pan after you have finished having your chicken. Again, I haven't seen this in any sefer, but from the, this is, Just because it's written or not written, that doesn't mean Rosh Hashanah sometimes likes to say the following joke. Sometimes he says something new or that other people haven't said before. He says, okay, so if you would shoot me and I'd be dead and it would be recorded in a book, so that makes it Torah? No, Torah is a live thing. Torah is something with vitality. We have Rabbanu, we have Poskim, we speak to them, and that's Torah no less than that which we read in the Sefer, somebody alive, dead, doesn't matter, it's Torah is Torah. But Rabbi Bleich pointed out an interesting thing. You can't destroy a kli. But if you just fold it in half, such that you could just, somebody who's going through the garbage might unfold it, or yourself, you could just unfold it, that might not be considered destroying it. So that might be an interesting thing to think about, that, okay, so you won't destroy it and crumple it like I usually do with vengeance to save the world, and the landfills, but maybe if you fold it in half to, you know, that also will help the landfills, such that you could just unfold it easily, that might be, you know, that sounds like it could be a solution, a partial solution. But again, I'm just raising something that I never thought about in my life until the past few days when I was working on this and never saw written anywhere, just something to maybe continue a discussion about. Question, yeah. So please don't go around saying that, oh, Rabbi Orlean says you're not allowed to do this or that, because I'm not sure about this. This is just a conversation we had recently this week and we can follow up on, but just between you and me, it's an interesting perspective, yeah.
What if he
That's exactly what I asked both Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Bleich, and maybe the very fact that you're about to throw it out, what do you mean? You're worried about you're destroying a kli? Hello, you're throwing it out for good. It's going down the street, it's going straight to the landfill. It's not, what kind of kli is this? What kind of utensil is this? And it's meant to be disposable. So here we get into a different question. If disposable aluminum foil pans are considered utensils or not considered utensils, do they have to be tovilled before you do it? Most people in America follow Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says that you do not have to tovel aluminum foil pans. There are some people who do. I don't think you know too many of them, or you know them and you don't know that that's what they hold. Most people aren't tovel aluminum foil pans because we don't consider them kalim. But it seems like that might not be so much the issue. It's still, you know, for this purpose, even though you're throwing it out, and it might still be considered a kli. Yes. Or the bristles, right. Right, you're saying that you could, that even if you're saying, even if I smush the pan a lot, I could still unfold it to its original position. Not just fold it in half, even if you fold it into eight halves, you could still ultimately unfold it. I hear what you're saying. In the context of borer, we said that you could pour a vegetable soup down a drain, because since you're throwing it out, your intention is not to do an act of borer, your intention is to just get rid of the soup. It happens to be that the drain is going to do a borer between the liquid which it's going to let through and go down to the pipes, and this is going to keep up the vegetables. That's because borer might be a little different. Borer is something where you have to have intention to do borer. Here, not only... I mean, here you do have intention to destroy the kli. You have intention to make it smaller. That's... Yeah, that's... Yeah. Okay. So again, please don't quote this as halacha in my name, but just something to think about. Let's finish this point, and I want to just mention one or two other three applications of makom patish before we get to food items and seltzer. Will be the capstone of tonight's shir. Rabbi Ribbiad in his 39 Malachas picture book, we all love picture books, they're on sale now in the SOI Sfarim sale, just a few blocks away. It's open until 10:30 tonight. So after you're ready on this side, you want to make your way over and spend some money, you could do that. So Rabbi Ribbiad points out that sharpening a pencil, let's think about that. Sharpening a pencil, it's not mechatech cutting, because you're not cutting for a specific size. It's not bona, you're not building something, because we don't apply bona when you have a utensil. Well, bona, as we said, is only when you're building a house or a structure. So what would be wrong with sharpening a pencil? He suggests you're making, it's makom patish. You're putting the finishing touch on this pencil by sharpening it. Interesting application. I mean, we would never think of sharpening pencils, probably because pencils are mukta. But even if we would get it out of the mukta, let's say I want to use it to scratch my head, it's mutta l'chatchila, right? For me to use a, if I don't have anything else that's conveniently going to scratch my head, I could use a pencil, l'chatchila, on Shabbos, because if it's mukta, machmas isser, you're allowed to, klisham l'chatchila isser, you're allowed to use it with tzrach kufa for some other purpose, like scratching your head. Let's say I have this like very precise spot on my head that I want to get perfectly on the dot. So I want a sharpened pencil to scratch my head. So that's where we could raise this question. Still, it would be makir patish. Now, another thing that happens very often, especially for guys in yeshiva, where or you're involved in any institution for Shabbos, and they have that toilet paper that is supposed to be separated one from another, pre-cut toilet paper, and really the edges are all attached, such that sometimes if you pull it out, the single fold pre-cut toilet paper, you'll get like a string of like 9 of them or 10 of them that are all attached at the corners. So Rabbi Ribiat says that disattaching those things from the corners, it's not like you're cutting it at perforations. No, they're pre-cut. They're just attached at the edge. Sometimes cheap tissues also has that, you have that problem. He said that might also be making the tissue from not usable to its proper usable state. As a separate independent tissue, might also be an application of makir b'patish. Finally, another application that was very cute is inflating a new ball. There's nothing wrong with inflating a ball on Shabbos. If you have a ball that's dead and you have little kids, so it's, the Shulchan Aruch says that adults shouldn't play ball on Shabbos. But for children, you don't have to say anything, the Shulchan Aruch says. So let's say you have kids and they need a ball to play with. So there's nothing wrong with inflating a ball. But if you're inflating it for the first time, right? You went to Modell's on Friday afternoon, you got your son a little kickball or something, and you take it home and you have to inflate it. So there, you're making it from being a non-usable klee to a usable ball that will have a proper bounce. There, that would be taking it from non-usable to usable and putting the finishing touch on the ball. That would be a problem of makir b'patish. If you have a ball, like all the balls in my house, which are all deflated, and you want to re-inflate it, that's going to be okay. That's mutar l'chatchila. Okay, so that was discussing a number of applications. Now let's talk about food items. Let me ask you a very simple question. Okay, any questions about what we talked about thus far? Great. Are you allowed to cook on Shabbos? Let's try that again. Are you allowed to cook on Shabbos? No. Okay, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Why not? Because it's cooking. Why didn't anybody ever say because it's makir b'patish? You're putting the finishing touch on the food. A 100%. So all the things that are not edible before and that you cook, like a raw, no one said you could bake challah on Shabbos, right? No one said you could bake raw chicken on Shabbos. Dough is not edible, raw chicken is not edible. Why didn't we say that's not makir b'patish? Why do we rally around you can't cook on Shabbos? I mean, it's true you can't cook on Shabbos, but it should also be in different malacha, right? Makir b'patish, you're putting the finishing touch on this dough. On this. Who's adding? You're adding or I'm adding?
I'm saying, what's the difference? It's already us and it's official. Why do I...
You're 100% right. Maybe there's no difference, but how can you never in your entire life ever heard somebody say, don't cook because it's makir b'patish? You're suggesting that makir b'patish is only the finishing touch, but if you take it from 0 to 100, the whole thing, that wouldn't be makir b'patish. I hear what you're saying. I have bad news for you. I'll say it nicely. There are many gemaras against what you just said. No, it's not correct. If you do something, it's even if you do just the finishing touch, but if you do the whole thing from beginning to end, that's certainly makir b'patish. Okay? One example I'll give you is there's a story in the gemara of traveling salesmen. It's actually very cute. Traveling salesmen didn't stay in hotels. You know what they did? They took a portable bed in their backpack. So they had, picture like an IKEA bed, that you know, you go to IKEA and you see a beautiful bed on display, and you say, I'd like to order that, and like 20 minutes later you see a box, and oh, I didn't realize I was supposed to put it together, and that takes you 4 hours, and now you wonder, I saved $30 by buying it in IKEA, and it took me 4 hours to build. That never happened to you? Okay. It happened to me. You buy an IKEA bed and you just leave it in the box and put the box in your knapsack and you go from place to place. Wherever you get somewhere that you want to stay for a few days, you build your bed. You finish, you unbuild your bed and you walk another few days and then you build your bed again. So the Gemara says clearly that if you build your bed, a mita shel tasi, the bed of metalsmiths who travel from city to city, that's chayav, mita araisa. Rashi says because of makkah b'patash. You went from the beginning to the end. That will be Malkah B'Patash, even though you didn't just put the finishing touch, you did more than the finishing touch. You did from the beginning till the finishing touch. That's also Malkah B'Patash.
If
you do only the first half of cooking, I don't know why you would do that, but yes, I can't say that you'd violate Malkah B'Patash. So I'll tell you why cooking is not Malkah B'Patash. The reason why cooking is not Malkah B'Patash is because, I'll tell you a story. Not such an exciting story, but I'll tell it to you anyway. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Bey, 74b, has the following halacha. Somebody went ahead and made a barrel on Shabbos. The Gemara says, if he made a barrel on Shabbos, he violated 7 different malachas in creating that barrel. We're not going to go through what 7 malachas the person violated, but we will point out, apparently, after they made this barrel, let's say it was a barrel out of like a pottery barrel, not out of wood, but out of pottery or ceramic. So it says that they would put it in the kiln to fire it up, and then afterwards they'd coat it. So Rashi says the coating, the shellac on the outside, that would be makkah b'patish. The putting it in the oven would not be makkah b'patish. Why wouldn't putting something in an oven itself be makkah b'patish? It's the making it hardened. Making the kli a usable kli. Rashi says, because it happened by itself. Me'eleha. It happened by itself. Meaning, I put it in the oven. 2 hours later, 14 minutes, 25 minutes later, whatever it is, I took it out and it was finished. Makkah b'patash means I'm doing an active ma'aseh, an active act, some kind of action that makes the thing happen. If I just put it in the oven and 20 minutes later it ends up being finished, that was not called putting the finishing touches on something. Putting the finishing touches on something means I put a finishing touch on it. Not that I set it up so that a finishing touch can happen to it. You hear the distinction? And therefore, whenever you cook, you always have, you're not doing something actively to, I'm going to cook this up. No, you're going to put it in the oven, and the oven's going to cook it up for you. Right? You're not cooking it, the oven's cooking it. And therefore, there's no makkah b'patash when we talk about cooking. Okay. So let's not talk about cooking. What about putting the cherry on top? Shalosh Shudas comes, and your milchik's ready because it's the summertime, and you got this really good ice cream, and you have some bananas that they're going to go if you don't use them soon. So you make yourself a banana split. And on top you have some chocolate syrup, and it's milchik's, and your milchik, it's great. You pour your chocolate syrup on top of your bananas, on top of your ice cream, and you have some sprinkles, and what do you put on top? Your cherry. Cherry on top. So is that makkah b'patash? You didn't build anything, you didn't fix anything, but you put the finishing touch on your banana split. So is that going to be a problem? Yeah. No, that's, if you have, the aluminum pan where we said when you bend it over, if you have something that the way it's meant to be used is by opening it and closing it. We're not going to say opening it, closing it, bending it, moving it like this will be considered creating or fixing. Rather, that's just how it's being used. With here, I had something, I created something anew. I had a banana, and I had ice cream and chocolate syrup, and I had a split, and I put them all together, and I put a cherry on top. I created something anew. Yeah. Rivka, that's fabulous. Yes, when you create banana splits, they are not meant to stand on display. When you create a banana split, you create it so that it could be destroyed very quickly. Yes, we're going to get there. We'll get there. We'll just build up for a few minutes, and then we'll eat it up in a few minutes. The Gemara has the following situation. You remember we learned Bishul on Shabbos? We learned on Monday nights, we learned about Bishul on Shabbos. So, we talked about pouring with a Kli Sheni, Kli Rishon, and we said, if it's pouring from a Kli Sheni, it's okay, I don't want to get you involved because you're going to fall asleep very quickly if I ever go there. But, we talked about salty fish. In the olden days, there was a very salty fish called Kulyas HaIspanin, very salty fish, that it was maybe like a herring, sort of, that you didn't, it was very thin, you didn't have to cook it. All you had to do was pour some hot water on it, and it was, but the salt itself had this, you know, had already done some stuff to it, chemically, I guess, even. And all you have to do is pour some hot water over it, and that would cook it up. I actually got a fascinating shayla I had to do some research for. Everyone knows what ceviche is? Ceviche? Probably ceviche. Ceviche is an Italian. It's Italian? I think, what? Mexican? Oops. I knew they didn't speak English, though. It's a Mexican. It's a South American, actually. I think South American dish that you basically take raw fish and you surround it with slices of lemon. And you leave it there for half an hour, and the acidity of the lemon creates some kind of chemical reaction with the fish, and I won't say it cooks the fish, but it makes the fish, it does whatever process that cooking would do, just with the acidity. So the question is, apparently I told them, so why don't you do it on Friday? No, it doesn't work like that. You have to do it Shabbos morning. So I did some research, and we found out that would probably be very similar to Bishul, to cooking on Shabbos. That would be a problem. So just similar to that, in the olden days, they had this very salty fish, and pouring boiling water on it is going to be a problem because it's so delicate and it's so close to being ready to eat. You just have to, and that's considered a problem of cooking. How do I know that's a problem of cooking? Because it's only us if you pour hot water on it. But if you would pour cold water on it, let's say to get rid of the salt and make it ready to eat, that would be mutter. Wait a second. Why would that be mutter? You're making it ready to eat. You're taking something that's inedible, it's too salty, and you're washing it off with this cold, hot water would be aser, fine, that's like Bishul, but cold water would be okay. Why would cold water be okay? It must be, proves the Mishnah Brura from this case, that makah bepatish, what do you mean? You're putting the finishing touch to make this kulyas ha'ispan, this salty fish, this herring, edible, by washing off the salt. Must be that we don't apply makah bepatish to food items. And therefore, I could have my cherry on top, and I could have my pink sprinkles on top of the white icing, on top of my chocolate cake for the kiddush that my neighbor is making tomorrow for their daughter, and the blue sprinkles for the Shalom Zachar. That's totally fine, because there's no makah bepatish for food. End of story. There's one problem. The problem is that there are two Yerushalmis that say that there is makah patish for food. I'll tell you what they are. It says you can't, I don't remember if it's peeling garlic or crushing garlic, I don't remember the exact details. The Yerushalmi says, if you do something other than garlic, it's a violation of makah patish. A few lines later, the Yerushalmi says again, this is a Yerushalmi for all you who like learning Yerushalmis, at least this way it will be recorded for all of eternity. Torah. This is Yerushalmi in Maseches Shabbos, Perek Zayin, Halacha Beis. Whenever you hear the word Halacha, XYZ in the Yerushalmi, it just means Mishnah. Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi work off the same Mishnayos. How they dealt with the Mishnayos, that was different in Bavel and in Yerushalayim. So if it says Perek Zayin, Halacha Beis in the Talmud Yerushalmi, that just means Perek Zayin, Mishnah Beis. So just, now you know your way around the Yerushalmi. So anyway, in Perek Zayin, Halacha Beis in the Yerushalmi, it says that if you do something with garlic, that would be makah bepatish. And similarly, when you make flour, F-L-O-U-R, not like flowers with petals, but flour like into bread. If you process the flour, make it into the flour, whatever process was specifically described there, that would be a violation of makah bepatish. So you see from the Yerushalmi that there is makah bepatish on foods. So how could we be saying that you're allowed to do whatever you want with food? You could put the cherry on top. You could pour cold water on your herring to make it edible. You could put the sprinkles on your icing. What do you mean? The Yerushalmi says you can't. There has to be an answer to this. Rivka, what's the answer?
You're going to eat it.
What do you do with garlic?
You change its form by crushing.
When you have garlic in your house, is it all consumed? No, you keep it in the cupboard for 5 months. You have garlic powder, you have crushed garlic, you have minced garlic. It's been in the cupboard for the past 5 months, so it will be there for the next 5 months. What about flour? Also, flour and garlic are both things that have a permanent status. Therefore, when the Yerushalmi says that there is makkah b'patish regarding food, that was only talking about what kind of foods? What kind of makkah b'patish is there? When you do something to a food to make it have a permanent, have a long-term shelf life, like garlic, like flour, but things that are like regular foods, like ice cream and like fish and like all the other things that are much more, you know, you eat it quickly, or if you don't eat it, it'll just spoil and rot if you don't eat it within the next few days. That kind of makkah b'patish, that kind of food, is not there's no permanence to your makkah b'patish. And therefore, makkah b'patish without any permanence will not be a violation of makkah b'patish. And that's the conclusion of this little mini discussion. So is there makkah b'patish by food? I mean, it's a hard question. It doesn't really matter about food. The point is, if it's for regular food, for most foods are not permanent. Therefore, the makkah b'patish will not apply. The prohibition will not apply. If you happen to find a food item that has a very long shelf life, like flour or garlic, there will be a problem makkah b'patish. Yes? If you're chopping extra, so aside from the chopping issues of tochein, there's a separate issue of doing for hachana for the week, and those will be two separate issues that you'll have to deal with. Makkah b'patish, you have to see. If it's something that will stay for a long, that has a long shelf life, it might also be makkah b'patish. You have to see if the Yerushalmi was talking about chopping or peeling. I'm not sure. Now that we learned everything that there is to know about makkah b'patish, we could come to our final application, and that is the use of a SodaStream seltzer maker on Shabbos. What do you use? What are you doing? How do you make soda? How do you make seltzer? What do they call it in Chicago? Pop?
Pop
or soda? What do you call it?
Oh, no, I have New York relatives.
Chicago. When you lived in Chicago, what did you call it?
I called it soda.
No, soda is seltzer and pop is soda, right? Seltzer is pop, or like Coca-Cola is pop? Coca-Cola is pop and seltzer is soda.
Seltzer is seltzer.
It's pop. That's
I'm lost. Okay, right there. So in the olden days, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about making, he didn't have a soda. Believe it or not, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank did not have a soda stream instrument. He talks about making seltzer by dropping in some kind of powder. Interesting. Maybe it was some kind of, he says like baking powder, avkat soda. That's like baking powder, I think. Maybe there's some chemical reaction that this, I don't know, bicarbonate of soda, you drop it in, it fizzes, and it... Yeah, like, you know, people have dentures, or when I had a bite plate many years ago, you drop those little bite plate or denture cleaners into a thing, and it fizzes up. I guess it was something similar to that. Denture cleaners. Delicious. So he's talking about making seltzer that way, but I think the same point would be in terms of the way we do it now, with injecting CO2. Into water to create seltzer, would that be permitted on Shabbos or not? Are you allowed to use a soda stream on Shabbos? So, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who is the Rav of Yerushalayim and Adam Gadol Ma'od, my father was zocha to ask him two shailas. My father went to Eretz Yisrael after he graduated YU in 1955. My father asked him about keeping 1 day of Yontif or 2 days of Yontif. And I think it was after his father, my grandfather, Baruch Hashem, died. So there's a chance he might stay. He stayed there for 3 years. He was working already. I think Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said he could keep 1 day at that. Again, that's not to be transferred to other people and other situations. That was one shaila my father asked him. And then my father also asked him about making tea with a kli sheni, as opposed to a kli shlishi, as opposed to using tea essence. I think Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank also said you did not have to use tea essence. Those are two questions my father asked him in like 1955, 56, 57. But anyway, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Adam Gadol Ma'od, one of the Gedolei Olam, he said that, based on what we just said, that when you have, is there makkah b'patish by making, you know, you're putting the finishing, you're taking water and you're turning it into this new thing. and you're putting a finishing touch by injecting, well, he's by dropping in this powder and making it into this soda, seltzer, whatever you want to call it, as opposed to just water, he says that's not going to be makabe patish, because makabe patish has to be something that you're, I don't know if he really says it has to be permanent, but he assumed that when you would put that liquid in, when you drop that powder in, it would go away, the fizz would go away, would leave pretty quickly. And if it's not permanent, it's not going to stay there, that's not going to be a violation of makabe patish. Anyone here use a soda stream? If you do use a soda stream, you inject the CO2, how long will it stay carbonated? It will stay carbonated for a very long time? I mean, it's not forever, because even the soda that I buy from, Vintage or ShopRite or Pathmark Seltzer, if you leave the cap open, the CO2 is going to dissipate after some time. Don't know. He also says another thing. He says, if something was ra'i le'echol beloza, right, you could drink the water perfectly fine beforehand, so you didn't really do anything. You didn't really improve it or change it. It's water, now it's water with, bubbles. So you're not really, he didn't consider that such a significant change. That he didn't think would be makkeh b'patish. And therefore he comes out, halacha ma'isa, tzvi Pesach Frank, says that making seltzer on Shabbos would be permitted. I assume that the soda stream instrument would not be any different than this little bicarbonate soda or whatever other stuff that they used to drop in. There's no electricity involved. And therefore, halacha ma'isa, it seems that it will be, even though there were poskim who were machmir, it seems that it should be mutter lechatchila to make seltzer on Shabbos. So these were our discussions of makkeh patish. I'm glad we had these conversations about makkeh patish, because you probably never learned makkeh patish before. There's a good chance you might never learn makkeh patish again. And hopefully next week we'll either, if I find some more things to discuss about makkeh patish, otherwise we'll go to a new topic next week. Thanks again all for coming, because it's coming out of the snow. Yashar koch achem. And I'll see you next week, 8:30. If anybody has any specific questions, you're welcome to come and discuss.